And you'd see young people, rich people, middle-class people all shopping in Whole Foods where the mangoes were three times as expensive as the Safeway or the produce market. They'll do that even if they can't really probably afford it.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Samir Kaul is an investor with Khosla Ventures, and I suppose you could say he works with Silicon Valley moguls. But he also sits on the board of the U.S. ski team, so it's the skiing type of moguls he's excited about as the Olympics are underway.
Here is Breezy Johnson. Chloe Kim with a Breezy Johnson.
You know, obviously Mikaela Shiffrin and Breezy Johnson on the women's downhill side, or Travis Ganong and Tommy Ford, who are both from the Lake Tahoe region, are really exciting. And then, yeah, I think the Chloe Kim and on snowboarding is going to be really exciting.
Where did skiing begin for you in life?
Pretty late, to be honest with you. You know, as kid of immigrant parents, skiing wasn't quite high on there. You know, it was math, science. it really started in my 30s when I had my kids, because I wanted them to learn to ski. And we lived in California, driving distance from Lake Tahoe. So I've probably been skiing for 15 years, and both our whole family enjoys the sport. It's a great family sport if you're a skier. The time on the chairlift with your kids, especially as they get older, where they have nowhere to go but to talk to you, it's pretty fantastic.
Now, I started skiing when I was about 12, but that doesn't mean I'm you know, a board member of the U.S. ski team. How does a guy who's been skiing for 15 years be involved with the U.S. ski team?
You know, I had a lot of friends on the board, and one thing that, and you'd hear stories about the ski team and the athletes, and there's a sexy, you know, you're Bodie Miller or something like that, Mikaela Shiffrin, and there's that. And then there's everybody else who've dedicated their whole life to skiing, have basically gone to ski academies for education, and then what do they do now? And so I said, you know, one way I can help, you know, and these are athletes, they're representing our country, they're putting it all on the line, you know, 4 years of hard work for a couple minutes on the slope, right? That kind of thing. And so I said, look, one thing that I can help do is, because I'm involved in a number of companies, is help folks for their post-ski careers and what can they actually do. And so that was what, you know, I love skiing. I love watching all sports. My kids all ski and love it. And I thought, what a great way that I could maybe use a little bit of my platform to help these folks in their post-ski careers.
What's the appeal of skiing? What reverberates with you that makes skiing something that you're excited about?
It's just so multifaceted. So if I want to go out in the morning for 2 hours by myself and have my AirPods in and listen to music, and it's very meditative, right? You can just ski up and down and take the chairlift, and you get this really nice rhythm, and the sound of the snow on your skis is really exciting. It's a great family sport. So we do a lot of family ski days where you got, you know, my young kids and my wife are all different levels, and we can all just spend a lot of time together. And then if you really want to push yourself and challenge yourself physically and mentally, I mean, half of it's between the ears if you're on some of the harder stuff, is it's mental. And And it's great. It's great to spend time, you know, on work trips to take a bunch of CEOs and spend time with them there. It's just a nice destination. Be outside, spend quality time together. No screens, no iPads, and just have a lot of fun. And it's a sport that, you know, people can enjoy. Like, I used to play a lot of tennis growing up. You know, tennis is hard unless you're about the same level. It just isn't that fun. With skiing, you all take the chairlift off. There's always a super difficult way to get down, and there's an easy way down. You can meet back up on the lift line and get the 10 minutes on the chairlift back up. So I there's a lot of things I love about it.
I'm going to take advantage of that obvious metaphor there for investing, the easy way and the hard way. Easy is investing in the obvious. Hard is finding those opportunities that are not obvious at all, like food. Pat Brown, a Stanford professor, approached Samir and his boss, Vinod Khosla, with an idea to make burgers out of plants.
And Pat had nothing. He didn't even have a sample. And he had a presentation of how he was going to change the entire food system in this country and in the world. And by doing so, save the planet. Right?
You would think he would have a tray of things to taste.
I think if he had a tray of things to taste, we would have passed. I think at that point it wouldn't appear.
That bad at first, huh?
Yeah, the first few samples were quite comical. Look, the food thing, to be honest, was a result of us licking our chops on some of the beatings we took in cleantech. You know, cleantech was a tough sector. We had now, as you go full cycle, we've had some real tremendous wins that have gone public and have, you know, so it's been a positive category for us financially, and obviously for the world, very positive. But you know, it was a tough time, and I was thinking, I was like, wow, I was pretty disheartened because I was thinking, wow, people talk a big game, but they won't pay more for power, and they won't pay more for fuel for their car. So energy really is a commodity. And then I read a few books about animal farming and how bad that was for the environment. I never thought of that. I never knew that cattle farming, you heard about methane and cow farts and jokes like that, but I didn't realize it was as bad for the environment as coal plants were. And then you go into a Whole Foods opened in my little neighborhood in San Francisco, and you'd see young people, rich people, middle-class people all shopping in Whole Foods where the mangoes were three times as expensive as the Safeway or the produce market. And you're like, wow, people will pay a ton of money more for food if it's organic or if it's locally sourced or if it's whatever, right? They'll do that even if they can't really probably afford it. So food is not a commodity. You know, Whole Foods proves that out. It organic proves that out. All these, and it's as bad for the environment as coal, which we learned the hard way was a commodity. So why wouldn't we look to invest here? And within that 6-month period of us understanding that, Pat came to us with this idea, and we're like, "Yes, let's do it." And then we've done a series of companies since then. You know, Impossible was the first. Soon after, Just Eat, you know, which was the former Hampton Creek, and we've done Ripple and Joywell and a few others as well in plant proteins and figuring out ways to reduce sodium and figuring out ways to reduce sugar. And while maintaining,
but does food scale as well as say, you know, investing in a sales force?
It's very different, right? You know, a SaaS company scales as a function of how many qualified SaaS salespeople, how long does it take to spin them up, and what's their quota, and are they able to achieve it, right? And so you can see SaaS companies can grow in a linear type way. What I'd say about food is the market's monstrously bigger. I mean, it's dramatically bigger, right? And it's kind of recurring because you're eating every day. Right, you're eating three meals a day. So it's not like, yeah, I'm going to pay $4 per seat per month for some HR software. But, you know, you're going to eat how many Impossible burgers, how many Impossible chicken nuggets are you going to eat per week? It kind of, probably more. It scales as a function of capacity and supply. So the demand is dramatic. So you'll see sales go like this. And then we'll build a factory and it'll shoot up. I'm using my fingers here, but you'll see these step functions in growth as a function of putting on supply. And you have to build these plants. So it takes time. It costs a lot of CapEx. But because the market is so big, and especially when it comes to, you know, plant-based foods, food, you know, the food market's all about cost, convenience, and taste, right? Impossible now, you can get, you know, mail order, you can get in almost all retail, you can get in tons of quick service restaurants. So it's convenient. I think the taste is as good, if not better. Certainly if you've tried the chicken nuggets, impossible that you could tell the difference. There's just no way you could
tell.
Absolutely
true. Right. Yeah,
right. And the taste test with the burgers and the pork give you similar type results. But I think the chicken nuggets are the most, I think, difficult to distinguish. And then cost, we're continually bringing down the cost. We're on the 2-for-5 menu at Burger King. I mean, you know, we were putting in these high-end restaurants. And people are like, it's only for the rich. Then we went to White Castle. Now we're in Burger King. Now we're in the combo menus at Burger King. Like, and we're selling.
Impossible Whopper with a patty made from plants. Only at Burger King.
People are going to Burger King. People are going to Starbucks and they're buying.
It's a great opportunity to sample it too. I mean, you know, what's my investment? It's a $3-4 burger. Yeah.
Yeah. $3-4 burger and you enjoy it. And then when you go to your Safeway or, you know, Kroger or Albertsons and it's there, you're like, great.
Your investment in Impossible comes after some frustrations in green tech. All kinds of people want to save the world and use money to do it. But there were frustrations.
Oh, for sure.
Big frustrations. Kozla Ventures bet big in things like making ethanol from wood chips. And some of those investments were spectacular failures, which got a lot of attention. That's just venture capital, and the firm's been very upfront about its missteps.
We made a lot of investments in ethanol, which didn't work out. We made investments in solar panels that didn't work out. Some like renewable plastics and things like that were better than existing materials. But what also happened is, remember, as these clean tech companies, sustainable companies scaled, you also hit the financial crisis. So what type of companies are going to get hurt more than illiquid, high capex, commodity-like materials, right? That's just, you're going to get crushed, right?
And what's not going to get hit is Burger King.
Burger King, yeah.
Exactly. You would never have guessed when you were, you know, thinking about, you know, wood and ethanol and whatnot, that the answer might have been hamburgers.
Would not have thought that. Now, like, I think that, I think you start to then also pivot. And this happened in Web 1.0 versus Web 2.0 versus whatever we're in now. If you look when I was in business school in 2000, you had the Petch.com and Stamp.com and eToys and Webvan, all these companies that then failed. And I remember when we were the first money in Instacart. So we put the first $1 million in there. And that obviously has become a tremendous return and will be whenever they decide to go public. But it was amazing how, you know, when I asked, I still remember I had a drink with the CEO at like 9:30 at night, and I was late because I was dealing with putting my kids to bed, and I almost didn't make it, but I went because I didn't want to be rude. And Apoorva is just a terrific entrepreneur, so it was the best decision. You know, like it was fantastic. But I remember talking to him, and a lot of people were passing on Instacart because they still had memories of Webvan, but they didn't put together. Back then, you had to drive home, go on your dial-up AOL connection modem, you know, wait for that to log on, and then put it in order on a terrible web-faced UI. Whereas with Instacart, while you're stuck at a traffic light or in the back of an Uber, you can order groceries for the week, and they're there by the time you get home. I mean, it's like a totally different. And so I think the other thing that we pride ourselves at are thinking about, hey, we invest in all these super cool technologies. Like, we have a company called Mojo, which does AR through contact lenses. So you ask yourself, hey, we believe this company is going to work, right? Yes. We believe that people will all, that AR is the next platform after the iPhone, and people don't want to wear goofy goggles. But if it's contact lenses in their eyes, they do it. Then what? Like, what would we have wished we had invested in if we knew that? Because we've got an insight now that the world can move in this direction. So what would we, if we could go back 5 years, what would we invest in?
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
How would that even begin to work, AR, in your contact lenses? The technology that's going to have to be developed, and of course, you know, we see technology developed in amazing ways, but you know, where does the power come from? Where is the receiver, et cetera?
Yep. So they've sorted out almost all, and I think soon this year, I'm happy to invite you to the company. You can put one of these in your eye yourself. It'll be allowed to do that. And so I'll let the company tell more about it, but it's all embedded. So you're printing a silicon circuit on a contact lens that can be a prescriptive contact lens that's aerated. And the battery image sensors are all in the contact lens. Audio is with AirPods and visuals, obviously, through the contact lens. And you do data transfer through RF.
The person I would have expected to have invented that would be Elon Musk. Now you skipped an investment in Tesla, right?
Yeah, that's a painful one because we just didn't.
You like how I transitioned though?
Yeah, thank you for that. Next, you'll talk about the 49ers or the Michigan bowl game, or you know, I don't know what else you'll bring up that's haunting me these days. But look, we didn't think that. Electric cars, a full auto company, could be built with venture capital dollars. And we were obviously very wrong because, you know, and the mistake we made, which I've learned from, this was, you know, 14 years ago or so, is that when you have someone who's as exceptional as Elon, just make the investment. It doesn't matter what they're doing, just make the investment because he's a once in a lifetime type entrepreneur and he's proven that. And we should have recognized that because we're also in the talent business. And so that now we did QuantumScape because we believed in electric vehicles. But we said, hey, look, why pick one brand, one electric vehicle? Because, you know, why not pick the best battery technology out there? Because then everybody will need that. Because we thought that would be the bottleneck. And it still is, frankly, right? The bottleneck in electric car adoption still is, what's the range? How fast does it take to charge? You know, I still charge my Tesla. It takes me 20 minutes to charge it up, 30 minutes to charge it up. Well, it should be 5. That's what it takes for me to charge at a gas station, right? And there have to be stations all over the place so I can drive, do a 500-mile road trip. And, you know, can I get cars with a 500-mile range? So batteries are still the rate limiting step to, like, even further adopt. The adoption is fantastic, but even further. So I'm very happy that we made we incubated QuantumScape with Jagdeep. But yeah, no, we obviously missed on Tesla.
You were a C-
That's one more thing I would say, though, Scott.
Yeah.
To the up and coming venture capitalists, you want to learn from the companies you passed on and or missed, right? And so I've learned, you know, when you get an exceptional entrepreneur, don't worry so much about valuation or what they're doing. Just invest in he or she because they're going to make success happen. But you have to focus on the investments that you've done because that's, in the end of the day, there's lots of good companies out there. And I'm sure there's some in your portfolio. You have to focus on those.
You originally were a CEO before you came to venture and raised money from venture. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from being on both sides of that table?
Well, one is I think a level of respect that I still remember people that were incredibly rude to me when I was an entrepreneur. I remember I was sitting in Kleiner Perkins giving a pitch, and they ended up investing. But they had the senior partner was a really nice guy, and he had to leave. And he apologized, said, "Look, I got to leave, but so and so, my associate, will finish up and walk you out." Because you're young. I was 27-year-old entrepreneur. Like, you're in the fabled halls of Kleiner Perkins and Sand Hill Road. You're very intimidated, right? And I still remember this. Like 2 minutes after the senior partner, who was a really good dude, left, the junior person got up and left. I said, "I got to go," and just left. So now I'm like picking up my computer, my laptop, and where do I put my coffee cup? How do I get out of here? And I'm just like, oh my God, like, and so you remember, it's crazy. They end up investing too. So it's like, you know, it all worked out. But you remember those things. So like, you know, you come to Coastal Ventures, either I will walk you out or an associate or someone is going to walk you out, show you where the elevator is and get you settled, call your Uber, whatever. Because in the end of the day, you know, to have the privilege to invest in an entrepreneur, you have to win the deal first. So I feel like I always put my best foot forward and, you know, try to get to the entrepreneur to want to work with me in parallel with doing due diligence. Because you're going to end up signing up for a 10-year relationship. So, you know, it's just broader than does the technical diligence or the financials or the IP work itself out.
There is, you know, all young entrepreneurs sitting down in front of venture for the first time are going to be intimidated. But there's something that is extra intimidating about Coastal Ventures, I think. It's, you know, that's a big name.
I hope, I can understand that. But I definitely hope that because we're all Vinod was an entrepreneur, I was an entrepreneur, Swen, David, we've all been entrepreneurs, that we've been in those shoes. And I can understand the intimidation walking in. I hope the intimidation disappears within minutes of spending time with us.
You've just started a new fund, Fund 7. It's enormous.
Well, not by today's standards. You know, we were one of the first to raise $1 billion venture fund back in 2008, 2009. And now that feels like, you know, every other day. It's like Steph Curry scoring 30 points.
Right. Yes. I've got a prop on my bookshelf. Obviously, you can't see this like Samir can over our video link. It's a crystal trophy that reads November 2012 eFluidator, that's a made-up company, IPO $26,200,000. It's from the TV show Silicon Valley, and it's marking a fictional IPO for the fictional venture capitalist Monica Hall, in which they raised $26 million. Which is a laughable amount of money at this point.
A seed round nowadays.
It's a seed round. Yes. What about valuations? Valuations have gotten very high, and it's sometimes I think hard to calculate the risk when the valuations get that high.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one we obviously get asked a lot, right? When you think about valuations, I look at it as, do I think this company, you know, I look at all my investments with four legs to a stool. Like, is there a really good
entrepreneur? That's a chair, by the way.
Yeah, that's a chair, exactly. So is the entrepreneur, is he or she really good? Is the market large? I don't want to take market risk. So I don't want to spend a lot of money figuring out whether people need this or not. It has to be something that's obvious, like, you know, AR and contact lenses or plant-based foods that taste better, cost the same, and are widely available. Right? It has to be something like that. Then is there something really proprietary on the technology side that keeps, that becomes a barrier to entry? And then does the deal make sense, right? And when I think about the deal making sense, I look at it as that if I think a 7 to 10 year horizon, can this be, you know, a game changing technology in a large market? And as such, what would that type of company be valued? You know, am I being rewarded for the risk I'm taking? But you know, it does mean that there are times when I'm looking at valuation, I'm like, I just don't buy it, guys. Like, you know, and or you say, wow, that's a pretty aggressive valuation. Even though I know your next round will be higher, that might be a better risk reward because you'll have then, you know, reduced whether it's market, product market fit or regulatory risk or some milestone technically. If I'm paying 2x from now, it's cheaper actually than paying what you're asking me for now.
And you, like a number of firms, have started opportunity funds where you can go back in. You're not taking the first risk. You're doubling down on companies that you already trust and know.
Right. We would have taken the first risk in those situations. We're already in. What we did, you know, and this was kind of, we looked at these companies that we led the Series A's or Series B's or Seeds, you know, the Impossibles, the QuantumScape, Stripe, Square, Instacart, DoorDash, GitLab, Okta, like all these, like just, you know, very successful, Affirm, Rocket Lab, you know, very, very successful companies. We looked at, boy, if we had just kept our pro rata rights and done pro rata across, and not even just the success, across all of our companies, so we didn't bias it. The IRR was in the 30s, maybe even low 40s. And we're like, wow, we're still working really hard on these companies. So it's not that by not investing, we're like, okay, someone else do the work. We're just handing 30 to 40% IRR away from us and our investors to later stage funds. And we're causing more complication for the entrepreneurs who'd prefer for us just to keep working with them. They don't want to go fundraising. They don't want to add other board members. And we're like, okay, we should go do that. And then, you know, we kind of we're oversubscribed pretty quickly, and we've made some, and we you know, so things like Checker and Impossible and Fair, which, you know, OpenTrons, companies like that otherwise we would have you know, not participate in their later rounds. We did. We still see 3, 5, 10x from where they are now. And we have the product or the instrument that allows us to invest in them.
It's nice to have a series of wins that you then get to reinvest in.
Yeah, it is. That's worked out well for us.
The last question, I would be remiss. I know you are a sports nut, and we are speaking on a day in which your favorite NFL team has announced its name, and I can see you sort of twitching your lip a little. So I'm glad I asked. What do you think?
I'm glad you asked too, because I hope you get when I thought Dan Snyder couldn't screw up the team more.
Just in case you're not familiar, Dan Snyder is the widely disliked billionaire owner of the Washington, D.C.-based NFL team, and Samir is one of their biggest fans. Known for decades as the Redskins, former quarterback Doug Williams announced the new team name live on NBC's Today Show.
What is the new team name?
Doug, what is it?
We are the Commanders.
It's bananas. Like, it's a long name. It's not catchy. Like, go Commanders. There's a lot. It's like, you know, go Niners, go Skins, go Blue. What are you going to do? Go Commies? No, that doesn't work. I mean, pick something, at least that starts with an R, you know, with the Redskins or something. I mean, I understand the name change. I'm not disputing that. But
oh, no, not by me either. I was kind of fond of the Washington football team. It had kind of a soccer sound to it. It was not terrible.
It's better than Commanders. I'm not saying I was a fan of the Washington football team either. It was better than the Commanders. But, you know, I think Snyder just, and it's amazing. Like, he still makes money. You know, John Riggins is like one of my all-time favorite former Washington whatever football team players, was, you know, begging people to stop going to the games because then maybe he wouldn't make the kind of money he's making, and then maybe he'd sell the team and so we can actually get reasonable ownership back in place. But it's, you're in Washington, D.C. Everybody loves the football team there. You can really rally the city around that versus all the other craziness that I'm definitely not going to talk about going on in Washington. But you screw this up. Like, I have friends who are now becoming Ravens fans because they're like, this is just, we've had it.
Sports fan, proud Michigan Wolverine, U.S. ski team executive, and founding general partner of Coastal Ventures, Semir Kaul. Next week on Sand Hill Row.
I set the frequency, voltage, and duration of the discharge. And when I'm ready, I hit the release button.
We go inside the dark room of artist Robert Bultmann. His electrified photos of nature can be found in the lobbies and offices of venture firms up and down Sand Hill Road. Sand Hill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.